Hello, this is Roland from the Flag Center. Are you thinking about a new flagpole for Memorial Day or 4th of July? Well, now is a good time. Currently, our high-quality Titan telescoping poles are on sale at prices too low to advertise. These beautiful silver or dark bronze poles are backed by a lifetime warranty and wind-rated at 95 miles per hour. The Flag Center, 2124 Hilltop Drive, since 1982.
Experience luxurious bliss with Pinnacle Cultivators, Redding's premier licensed legacy cultivator, exclusively at the Queen of Dragons in the city of Shasta Lake. Pinnacle's carefully crafted, expertly curated flower guarantees an exceptional experience with rare genetics and distinctive flavors, freshly packaged daily for a genuine farm-to-table experience. Visit 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard or call 530-276-9771 for delivery and hours of operation. Visit queenofdragons.com or follow us on X at the Queen Dragon.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
Instead of a republic with great-souled statesmen, we now have a society of managers, which I think really took hold at the beginning of the progressive era.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was John Bertka, president and CEO of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, also the editor of a new book, Gateway to Statesmanship, Selections from Xenophon to Churchill. We'll talk in depth with John a little later on in today's program about statesmanship and the new book. First up on today's show, we're joined by John J. Miller. He is director of the Dow Journalism Program at Hillsdale College, also author of multiple books, including Reading Around, his most recent. You'll see him in the Wall Street Journal and over at National Review as well. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Scott.
Talking today about another idea involving journalism, and this is an idea that has been discussed in some smaller places. There are some states that are thinking about it. Vouchers, so taxpayer money, given to Americans to then give to newspapers or periodicals, something they want to subscribe to get the news. So the idea of vouchers for journalism. Explain a little bit how you understand this would work, these proposals.
So first of all, Scott, I think this is a well-intentioned bad idea. It's a response to a problem, which is the collapse of newspapering in this country. We're hearing about this new term, news deserts, these areas that really have no local journalism organizations holding governments accountable and doing the basic reporting that democracies, republics need. Also, there's just the undercoverage of really everything anymore. Local and state news, especially local and state government, especially, and so forth. And at the heart of it is the fact that there are just smaller, the newspapers are getting smaller, many are failing, and so on. And so this is a kind of problem. And one of the responses to it is the idea of a news voucher. And we're seeing this discussed in the District of Columbia, also in Seattle, maybe other places. But the basic concept is the government would subsidize these organizations, but rather than giving the subsidies directly, they would give citizens in these jurisdictions a voucher that you then could send essentially to a newspaper or a magazine or a news website, I suppose, which then could turn around and cash it in with the government and get a check of money to allow them to continue doing their work. So this is an idea that's coming around, and it's in response to a genuine problem, but it raises all kinds of its own problems.
Yes. One of the major reasons we've talked previously about this, the recent layoffs, downsizing in many entities, is the drying up of advertising revenue. These voucher ideas, would they simply be a temporary band-aid? Could something like this make up for the vast amounts of revenue that have been lost over the past couple of decades?
No, the amount of dollars they're talking about comes not even close. And that's not an argument to make these programs even more expensive and bigger.
Yeah.
But the amounts they're talking about are really a pittance. Also, in the District of Columbia, one of the rationales for it is, the Washington Post recently laid off a bunch of people. So what are we going to do now? We're going to turn around and subsidize the publication owned by Jeff Bezos? The fundamental problem here is that the business model of newspapers, the old-fashioned business model, has gone away. Newspapers used to rely so much on, well, advertising, especially classified advertising, and that has moved elsewhere. Now, advertisers are much more interested in the kind of micro-targeting they can do on social media. Classified ads have moved on to online platforms. And also, a lot of the information we used to get from newspapers, we now get elsewhere. It used to be that if you wanted to look up stock prices, or if you wanted to see a baseball box score, if you wanted to know what the weather was going to be like this weekend, you had to look in your newspaper. Now we do all that stuff on our phones. So the information the newspapers supply is less than it once was. So the product has diminished in a sense. And I love newspapers, Scott. I'll read them for the rest of my life. I'll never stop reading newspapers. I absolutely love them, but they aren't what they once were, and they're going to need a new business model. And I think that these subsidies are not it.
Many of these proposals include language that says, hey, you get to choose. You get the voucher. You can give it to anybody you want, doing local, a lot of times it's local journalism. How long until the government says, well, anyone but not them.
Yeah.
We don't like them.
Exactly. Like, wait until they endorse the challenger to the incumbent, right, in the primary or something. Then we'll see how long these subsidies last. But this is one of the problems with getting the government mixed up with the quote-unquote free press. You know, the founders' vision of a free press, you know, they stuck it in the First Amendment, has a kind of pride of place there. Mm-hmm. They understood the importance of it, and they also knew it needed to be free of government interference. And really, you can't have that when you have these subsidies in place.
John Miller with us, who's the director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College. In theory, there's a government buffer because someone is giving it to an organization. But that brings up something I've talked about with people in the industry, and the idea of newspapers and news organizations becoming fan service sort of organizations in which they are writing stories in order to entice people to remain with them. They don't want to make them mad. If this kind of voucher system goes into place and people become reliant on vouchers from people who are reading the newspaper, the incentive, I guess I'm asking about, not to make people mad with what they write.
Yeah, I mean, I do think newspapers should write the articles that people want to read, but they also have another kind of service. And I would hope that people would want to read articles that are challenging, ask difficult questions, that hold government and public office holders accountable, those kinds of things, and have a kind of tolerance for newspapers that can be pesky and ask uncomfortable questions. You're right, though, that this could make the problem you cite even worse. And there's another problem on top of it, which is this, that under these proposed laws, as I understand it, the services that the papers provide then would have to be free, because what you're not doing with these vouchers is buying a subscription for yourself. What you're doing is you're directing government money. And the government money has to go to news that is free and available for everybody, which sounds great. But newspapers are businesses. They need to make money. Mm-hmm. And now what you're going to do, you're going to go what? Subsidize the free ones, which then are going to compete against the ones that are trying to sell ads, trying to sell subscriptions, putting information behind paywalls because they're desperately trying to make money. So with these subsidies, you're going to subsidize the ones that are free to compete against the ones that are not and are trying to avoid this kind of interference. Right. You're going to distort the market even further.
Yeah. I think depending on the bill, there are some that say it has to be non-paywalled content at least. You have to have
right.
universal access.
Yeah. So there might be some hybrid versions here, but the point is you're going to make it harder for a lot of papers to make money. In fact, you're going to create artificial competition. This is how governments distort markets when they come in and subsidize things and think they can improve upon competition. Look, newspapers are in a bad spot right now. They do need a new business model. Maybe they won't survive. I don't know. I hope they do, but this is not the answer.
If these proposals become more serious, there was one in D.C. at the end of last year, other areas you mentioned, do you anticipate that the news organizations involved will welcome this inflow of money through these taxpayer vouchers, or are they right to be somewhat wary about it?
I think you'll find different reactions. Some will be wary and want to stay away. Others will want to know the details of how these things operate. Others will just find ways to try and claw at this money. So I think it'll be a variety of responses, but who knows? And this is at best a Band-Aid that will move some money around, but solve no problems.
And at some point, if it doesn't solve the problem, the request will come for more taxpayer.
We need more now, please.
John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College. His most recent book, Reading Around. You can also find him writing at National Review, in the Wall Street Journal, and elsewhere. John, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott.
Up next, John Birchka. We'll talk with him about Gateway to Statesmanship, selections from Xenophon to Churchill. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Hi friends, Tobacco and Brew here with a new cigar of the humidor, La Aroma de Cuba Pasión. Straight from the estate of Don Pepin Garcia comes this excellently crafted cigar. Profound notes of nougat, leather, molasses, and cedar please the palate throughout. La Aroma de Cuba Pasión. Be sure to get yours today. Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Do you or someone you love struggle with PTSD, anxiety, depression, insomnia, OCD, alcoholism, substance abuse disorder, autism, ADHD, brain fog, or traumatic brain injury? At Shasta Meadows Wellness Center, Dr. Tagger and his team offer safe, proven, and effective care, even for those resistant to typical medicine. Learn more about Shasta Meadows Wellness Center. They have IV ketamine or at-home oral ketamine. Ask about the state-of-the-art EEG-guided TMS therapy. This customized, safe, no-side-effect option is effective on a wide range of difficult-to-treat conditions. Visit us today at ShastaMeadowsWellness.com. Don't just get by. Get well.
Call to make an appointment for a free consultation. 530-444-8304. 530-444-8304. Shasta Meadows Wellness Center in Redding.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday Match, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Join Token's radio show every Sunday at 2 p.m. on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as host Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Token's radio show with Linda and Christy this Sunday at 2 p.m. on KCNR. Big and exciting changes are underway.
Here at KCNR Radio, we are fortunate to have two well-informed citizens. Hi, I'm Nick Gardner.
And I'm Doug Janke, and we'll give you the inside scoop of news affecting you.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest, Sundays here, 8 o'clock.
KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and on your AM dial, 1460.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. It's at podcast.hillsdale.edu. There you can find older episodes of this show, plus other great Hillsdale College audio. We're joined by John Bertka. He is President and Chief Executive Officer of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. Also is the editor of a brand new book, Gateway to Statesmanship, Selections from Xenophon to Churchill. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on, Scott.
Tell us a bit about the book. You write the introduction. There's a guy that we kind of like who writes the preface for the book, and then selections from a whole bunch of gentlemen who have been statesmen through the years. Tell people a bit more about this one.
Absolutely. So my love of statesmanship, in particular these classic texts, which are called Mirrors for Princes, that offered advice for political leaders back in the ancient world. My love for that literary genre was actually born when I was an undergraduate student at Hillsdale College, and I discovered through both Larry Arne in his Aristotle class, but also Stephen Smith in the classes that I took with him on Thomas More and on Erasmus, this love for this ancient tradition of statesmanship that connects the world of theory to the world of action. And as I looked out at our current political landscape today, I see a lot of people perpetually complaining about Washington, D.C., and rightly so. Particularly Congress has a very low approval rating among all Americans. And, you know, I began to wonder, there's so many books out there offering advice to entrepreneurs for how to become the next Steve Jobs, for how to build a unicorn company. But there's nothing really comparable offering practical advice for statesmen to become great leaders. And so the project behind my book was going back to these ancient texts, going all the way back to the Greco-Roman, Judeo-Christian world. I've even included some texts from ancient India, China, and the Islamic world on statesmanship so that we could hold them up as a mirror, as an example for our leaders today, and hopefully, you know, do that hard work of educating the next generation of American statesmen.
We should be specific about this. Dr. Larry Arne, the president of Hillsdale, does write the preface here. Your foreword, or your introduction, I should say, is about this Mirrors for Princes tradition. Why do you think that this tradition suffered a decline, and why is it so important to resurrect it for our current age?
So I think there's really two reasons that it suffered a decline. The first one is that at the beginning of the progressive era, there was a shift away from statesmanship classically understood towards management, expertise, and bureaucracy. And you see an accompanying shift in the academy at that time, which has only gotten worse today, where young men and women are no longer reading the classic texts of Western civilization. Instead, they're really focused on managing society through the social sciences and through other bureaucratic processes. So instead of a republic with great-souled statesmen, we now have a society of managers, which I think really took hold at the beginning of the progressive era.
The selections in the book range all the way back to ancient to modern. Tell us about some of the statesmen, some of the thinkers that you highlight in your book, and why in particular you selected them.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think we have to start with Xenophon. He's the very first text that you see there in the title. And Xenophon was actually a general in an army called the 10,000. And he fought, you know, in a mercenary army that was actually trying to reconquer Babylon. And he wrote this book, The Education of Cyrus, you know, writing about one of his heroes and role models. And this was a young man who grew up in ancient Persia, Cyrus the Great, and had a very rigorous education as a young boy, teaching him really what I would say are more martial virtues, restraint, fighting, hunting, you know, think of kind of ancient Sparta. But it tells the story of this young boy growing up and how that formative education made him into a leader who at the time conquered all the way from modern day Iran to Greece. But then after that conquering and the challenges of leading men in very dangerous conditions, he then had an even greater challenge, which was ruling. And so he had to figure out how to rule, how to be a prudent leader. And then sadly, when he died, his children screwed it all up. And he says that the educational system really fell into decay. But the thing that I like about Xenophon, and the thing that I think is really important for our American context, is he talks about how when educational standards are heightened, a civilization prospers. But when educational standards decline, civilizations come to ruin, even the greatest ones, which I think is quite a prophetic warning for America. Although I know there are great groups like Hillsdale and like ISI that are fighting to change that. And then lastly, I would turn all the way to the present, to Charles de Gaulle. Charles de Gaulle wrote this book called The Edge of the Sword. And I have a selection from the book. I actually had to get permission from Charles de Gaulle's son in order to use it in this collection because it's hard to find an English language translation. But Charles de Gaulle was a prisoner during World War One, but he was actually very disappointed in himself for getting wounded in battle. He felt some sense of shame that he wasn't out there fighting more on the front lines, that he spent so much time in prison drinking coffee and reading old books and newspapers. So when he got out, he actually sketched his portrait of an ideal political leader. He was in his early 30s when he wrote this, and then he devoted the rest of his life to becoming that great leader that he described. And he drew from inspiration from Aristotle and other classic leaders that your audience might be familiar with. And then he would go on, of course, to defend France during the Nazi invasion, found the Fifth French Republic, serve as president for 10 years and usher in, you know, the 30 glorious years of French kind of economic growth and prosperity. But I think it's a testament to what someone with ambition rightly directed can do if they glean the wisdom from this ancient tradition and then set it before them as a model to aspire to. And I think as a society, we need to really be setting that bar high for our statesmen and then really creating and strengthening these educational institutions that can raise the odds of us getting better and hopefully great statesmen, especially in moments of crisis.
John Bertka is with us. He's editor of the new book, Gateway to Statesmanship, Selections from Xenophon to Churchill. Is there any single lesson or particular lesson that you noticed remained consistent across the authors you've chosen in this book, or a theme that was emphasized no matter when, the time, or era?
That's a great question, because I do include quite a variety of sources. The medieval Christian world is not the ancient Indian world or the Chinese world or the Persian world. But one theme is constant throughout, and it's that you cannot, it's impossible to be a great leader unless you have self-control. So restraint of the senses, as the ancient Indian author Kautilya describes, is really the foundation for political leadership. And this is a tough quality because many leaders don't quite have self-control, and it's a difficult thing, especially in sometimes in light of their ambition. But this is something that is really, it's true in the ancient, you know, pagan classical world, and it's true in the Christian world. Unless you can control, right, your own body, your own thoughts, your own words, there's no way you can lead in your household, in your community, and in your nation or in your kingdom.
John, will pause right there and come back in just a moment to talk more about statesmanship and the new book, Gateway to Statesmanship. John Bertka is with us. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Looking for a career? One that helps your friends, neighbors, and community? Good news! The Redding Rancheria Trinity Health Center is having a job fair Saturday, April 20th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the new health center in Weaverville. It's your chance to learn about our current career opportunities, meet with representatives from multiple Redding Rancheria departments, discuss employee benefits, and even get assistance submitting applications. The Redding Rancheria Trinity Health Center job fair, Saturday, April 20th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the new health center. Come and learn how to become part of our work family and make a difference in our community.
Attention all gardening enthusiasts. It's time to celebrate 50 years of greenery and growth at Gold Leaf Nursery in Redding. That's right, folks. For almost a half a century, Gold Leaf Nursery has been your go-to destination for all things garden-related. And to mark this incredible milestone, they're throwing the biggest sale this year. The nursery is blooming with vibrant perennials and annuals, hardy shrubs, succulents, and majestic trees, vegetables, herbs, roses, ground coverings, along with 1 gallon or larger and all bag soil amendments. Their extensive selection ensures that there's something for every taste and style. And don't forget about their premium selection of statuaries, fountains, and bird baths to add that perfect finishing touch. At Gold Leaf Nursery, they're not just about selling plants. They're about cultivating joy, creating memories, and nurturing connections with nature. Come visit them today and let them help turn your outdoor space into a sanctuary you'll love coming home to. Thanks for voting Gold Leaf Nursery best in the North State. Come check them out on Churn Creek Road, 1/4 mile from Airport Road. Open Tuesday through Saturday.
The official meeting of the Business to Business meeting is called to order. Business to Business, where we always say, make every transaction a win-win-win. Our guest today is Steve Clark from Minuteman Press of Reading.
Today I'd like to talk to you about business cards.
Well, I just get mine from this.
Don't say it. Don't do it. If you're thinking of ordering your business cards online, don't do it. Keep your business local.
But they're cheaper online.
Not. No. Business cards from Minuteman Press of Reading start at just $35, and custom design services start at $29, and you keep your money local.
Hey, that's a win!
Let us at Minuteman Press of Reading take care of your business cards. Rapid turnaround time and priced right. We also do full-service direct mail and promotional products at Minuteman Press of Reading.
Call 221-0400. That's 221-0400.
For Minuteman Press of Reading, where we design, print, and promote you.
221-0400. That's 221-0400.
Minuteman Press of Reading. Call today.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Thank you, Reading Rancheria, for supporting Tree of Life International Charter School. Gracias por todo su apoyo.
Thank you, Reading Rancheria!
The Shasta Lake Chamber of Commerce wants to thank the Reading Rancheria. They have sponsored our Friday night in the park for more than 18 years, and we really appreciate it.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with John Bertka. He is president and CEO of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, also editor of the new book, Gateway to Statesmanship, Selections from Xenophon to Churchill. John, you mentioned the most recent entry in this book is from 1932, a pair from 1932, Winston Churchill and Charles de Gaulle. Is that a comment in a way on our contemporary political leaders, that we are nearly 100 years since the last entry? And do you think there's a particular reason why perhaps so many of our modern leaders fall short of these standards?
So, yeah, that's a great question. So historically, this Mirrors for Princes tradition ended, you know, shortly after the Renaissance. It largely disappeared. The founders would have been familiar with some of these classic texts, but no one was really writing any new ones. So what I did was add a few from the 20th century, and I picked figures who I thought, you know, would be considered canonical, who are revered as great leaders, not just by conservatives, but I think broadly by most kind of people in the Western world, Churchill and de Gaulle. But as you near your way towards our contemporary context, I do think there's a few things going on. In one sense, the education that a Churchill or a de Gaulle had is not the type of education that our leaders are getting today at Harvard, at Yale, at the top schools in this country. And so I do think that actually reduces the odds that a great-souled leader will emerge in our own context. At the same time, I think we're also a little bit too close to our leaders to see and determine whether or not they'll be, you know, added to this kind of canon of truly great figures. You think of someone like Ronald Reagan, who is, you know, held in very high regard, who, you know, very well might turn out to be one of those great leaders remembered by history, obviously played a pivotal role in bringing down the Soviet Union, winning the Cold War without a shot. And so potentially he could be added to the canon, but I like to wait and see, to give, you know, history time, you know, give it another 10, 20, 30 years, and then let's look back and see if we would deem him worthy to rise to the level of some of these other leaders.
So how do we instill these virtues that are discussed inside the book Gateway to Statesmanship? What should education for the modern day statesman look like?
Well, with the exception of you know, Hillsdale's master's program, there really aren't that many programs devoted to educating statesmen, right? There's a lot of you know, public policy schools at major universities, and I think this is a real dilemma for us. If you look at, let's say, the world of sports, think of the NFL, right? Think of the NBA. Think how much time and attention. I mean, these players who are at the peak of their powers go through years upon years of training, disciplining their bodies, their minds for 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day for several decades, you know, in order to play at that level. And when you compare the quality of people that we have playing in the NFL and their excellencies to the members that we have in Congress and the amount of time that they have spent studying the craft of statesmanship, it's just abysmal, and it's quite depressing. So, you know, I think there's a way in which, you know, by increasing the number of classical schools and charter schools and strengthening Hillsdale College, building more Hillsdale-like colleges around the country, that could certainly help. But those are really big things, and they're also expensive things. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps one solution from this tradition is that historically, you know, education of great leaders didn't happen at some grand university. It was one-on-one, a mentorship relationship between a teacher and a pupil. And, you know, the teacher maybe met with them on a weekly basis. They picked these particularly biographies of great leaders, and they set them before these young statesmen or even older statesmen, and really helped them to articulate and define the type of leader they wanted to become. And they surrounded themselves with examples so that they could, you know, really train their imagination to rise up to the level of the great leaders who've come before them.
We've discussed this mirrors for princes tradition. I wonder about our leaders today and the example they set, or the mirrors that they serve as. What are they telling the next generation of leaders here in America? What kind of example are they setting, and what is it doing to potentially that next generation?
Well, unfortunately, you know, I think there are some examples, you know, a handful of examples in the Senate or governors at the state level that are setting a positive example, both in terms of their rhetoric, their ideas, their policies. So I don't want to come off as overly despairing. But I do think we're in a peculiar situation where early in American history, you had this idea of the reluctant statesman. You know, they call Washington the American Cincinnatus. This is a man who had command of a military army, who won a great victory over the greatest empire known to mankind at the time, the British Empire, and could have used that power to become king or to become a dictator, and decided to return back to his farm. And eventually, you know, was reluctantly pulled, you know, to attend the Constitutional Convention and became president of the United States. But then he stepped down after two terms and wrote a very beautiful letter, his farewell address, which I've included, with a lot of admonitions for America. And so historically, you would have had educated leaders who were playing large roles in their communities, in their societies, in their businesses, who would be kind of reluctantly called to public service. And it was something that they saw as a great honor, but it wasn't really motivated primarily by self-interest or gain. Perhaps that's a slightly overly romantic view of it, but that's certainly the ideal that a Washington set. In today's context, it's a lot harder. Even with the shift in the 20th century, you know, the progressive movement leaves nothing untouched. You even see in leaders like Churchill, like de Gaulle, like Teddy Roosevelt, a very strong sense of individuality, and a strong sense of personality and charisma that plays a big part in their leadership qualities in a way that it might not for someone like Washington. But by the time you get to this modern day with social media and with cable news, with cameras actually in Congress, you know, C-SPAN, I love the work of C-SPAN. They recently filmed a book talk I gave, but having cameras inside Congress, I think is actually quite problematic because all of a sudden everything is performative, mm-hmm. right? And there's not actually the work of governing doesn't really get done.
John, in your role as president and chief executive officer of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, you're working on college campuses with college students often. What do you generally hear from them about the possibility of public service, about the possibility of statesmanship? How do they see that role?
So that's a great question. I actually just finished a 3-day seminar down in Dallas with a group of 22 of our students, and we were reading through these classic texts on statesmanship and talking a lot about it. You know, I think right now, given the precarious moment that our country finds herself in with, you know, $36 trillion in debt, with a crisis at the southern border, with, you know, a cultural war, you know, for the soul of America at home and then abroad, multiple crises erupting throughout the world, what I'm seeing in our students is actually a desire for action, a desire to, you know, not give up on America. As Thomas More said, not to abandon the ship in a storm because you can't control the winds. You know, they've grown up in an environment that is actually quite hostile to their faith, to their values, to their politics. And I think a lot of them are ready to get in the fight. And they actually do have a hope that America and this great nation can be restored. So I'm actually quite optimistic about what I see on campus. There's a funny way in which the worse that things get, the more people wake up to the reality that something needs to be done. And I think you see the light going on in a lot of young people's heads that things are not the way they're supposed to be.
John Burtka, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute and author, editor of the new book, Gateway to Statesmanship, Selections from Xenophon to Churchill. That is available now. John, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Up next, we talk with Dr. Andrew Russell from Hillsdale's Biology Department about his and his students' research into biofilms. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Al Gordon, Coachmaster Auto Body. Big box store body shops have come to our area. They contract with as many insurance companies as possible. They provide discounts for these referrals. This allows the insurance company to dictate the parts and repair process to ensure the lowest cost of repairs as possible. This is not in your best interest for your expensive investments. At Coachmaster, we work for our customer, not the insurance company. We have no obligation to cut parts prices or use inferior parts. We follow strict manufacturer repair guidelines. It's your choice and your choice alone where you choose to have your vehicle repaired. Coachmaster was established in Reading in 1969 and doing quality repairs in Reading for over 55 years. Coachmaster has proven to be your best choice for collision repair. And yes, it is your choice. Our friendly service and quality repairs will have you referring all your friends and family. And remember, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Remember Coachmaster on East Side Road. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Fire and Destruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue, open and free, every other Sunday, right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with John Bertka. He is president and CEO of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, also editor of the new book, Gateway to Statesmanship, Selections from Xenophon to Churchill. John, we're joined by Dr. Andrew Russell. He is associate professor of biology at Hillsdale College. Dr. Russell, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me again.
Continuing our conversation we started a while ago on biofilms, last time we talked about a beer tubing, in fact, this time something a little bit different. But for people who did not hear that initial conversation, just give us a little background, if you could, about biofilms and why there are times we have to prevent them from forming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, biofilms are essentially just the growth of microorganisms like bacteria and yeast, and they're growing in a communal type of aspect where they work together to stick to a surface and do things together. So this field is really just interested in how they form and how we can prevent them from forming. So there are various aspects where biofilms are bad, and now the research is actually starting to go in a direction where they're looking for beneficial applications of biofilms.
You and some of our Hillsdale students have been researching a compound called zingarone. So what is that?
Yeah, we were looking for ways to prevent biofilm formation. So a lot of the research has already been done in how they form. Mm-hmm. We've gathered a lot of information about how these bacteria do this. So my research is more applied research, trying to figure out ways that you can prevent biofilms from forming in situations where you don't want them to, like, for instance, growing on some sort of implant like a pacemaker or tubing that's somebody needs while they're in the hospital. If biofilms are growing on that, it can cause disease. So it would be great if we could figure out ways to prevent them from forming in those scenarios. So a student of mine was looking at different projects, and we stumbled upon some literature suggesting that this chemical compound called zingarone, which is just a natural occurring compound found in ginger, you can extract it very easily, you can buy it commercially, but it had been previously shown to have some medicinal purposes. So we investigated, can this compound actually help prevent bacteria from forming biofilms? And we looked at one specific species. I won't bore you with the long name of it, but it was an emerging disease-causing pathogen that's supposed to be an opportunistic pathogen, meaning that for most healthy people, it's not an issue. Mm-hmm. You come into contact with it all the time. It's in the soil. But for somebody who's like undergoing cancer treatment, or they already have an autoimmune disease that leaves their immune system weakened, it can actually cause issues. So it makes a good test subject for undergraduate research because it's not dangerous to work with as long as somebody's not immunocompromised. And we don't need any special facilities to work with it. So we were studying this, and we found that this compound zingarone was quite effective at preventing this particular species of bacteria from sticking to surfaces and forming these biofilms.
And that's what was happening over this past summer, where our Hillsdale students were examining the mechanism that zingarone uses to function. So what were the results? What did we find out over the summer?
Yeah, after we initially figured out it seemed to be pretty effective at not just not killing bacteria. That's one emphasis that I want to make here on the research, is that we're not looking for something to kill the bacteria. We're looking for something to prevent them from working together to stick to the surface. So that's the remarkable thing that we discovered, that this compound doesn't kill the bacteria, but it does prevent them from working together to form biofilms. So after we had this initial result, we started asking more questions like, hey, how widely effective is this compound? So some of my students were working with testing on various species. And then we started to get more into questions like, okay, if it is affecting many different types of bacteria, how is it doing that? So we came up with a hypothesis, which was that it's preventing biofilms from forming by disrupting the communication system that these bacteria have. It's called quorum sensing. That's the chemical system that these bacteria use to talk to each other. It's not any different than like you and I saying we want to go out and play a football game together. We need 22 people to play 11 on 11, right? Well, it would be kind of pointless for you and I to go out to the football field, just the two of us with a football, and just expect people to show up and we can have a game, right? So the same thing goes for bacteria. They need to make sure there's a quorum or a set threshold of their friends around in order to do certain things like form biofilms or produce toxins that might cause disease in the human body. So they communicate through these chemical signals called quorum sensing. So the hypothesis went that maybe zingerone is actually disrupting or jamming this sort of communication between the cells. So two of my students actually worked with two different species of bacteria this summer, which use two different chemical communication systems, meaning completely different compound that they produce, completely different way of talking to each other. And surprisingly, we found that zingerone actually was able to prevent both of those communication systems, supporting our hypothesis, which was really exciting because, you know, to go from something that's just a hunch to then actually seeing it work in two different species was actually quite remarkable.
Talking with Dr. Andrew Russell here, Associate Professor of Biology here at Hillsdale, about zingerone preventing biofilms. So with what you know so far, where are some areas in which this research and continued research might be useful?
Yeah, the way we originally got interested in this was the type of bacteria we started with, which I said was an opportunistic disease-causing organism, is an issue for contact lens wearers. And my wife's actually an optometrist, so it kind of increased
my interest.
So she
put you up to this.
No, well, she didn't, but she was a good help in supplying some old contacts that we could use to test this on. So, so one of the direct applications of this is trying to create situations where you have better contact lens solution that you can soak and clean your contacts with that will prevent biofilms from growing overnight. Because believe it or not, with just the old classic saline solution that you use, there are bacteria that can grow in that. And if you leave your contacts in there just for a period of overnight or a couple of days before you wear them again, there's already a biofilm that's formed on there. And especially those that don't, you know, effectively clean them off, you're going to have stuff growing. And so for you and I, if you're not immunocompromised or undergoing chemotherapy treatment that weakens your body, it's not going to cause you an issue. But for those people, something like that can cause a serious eye disease. You can actually take this compound and figure out a way to impregnate it or stick it to the surface of other surfaces that you want to prevent biofilm from sticking to. So any type of implant, anything that's going to go into the body, any tubing used for breathing or feeding tubes, it's often a cause of disease in the medical field. Or, you know, even in industrial applications or in agricultural applications, if there's certain surfaces where disease-causing bacteria form biofilms, you could take this compound and either use it as a liquid solution to clean things off or soak things, or you could, well, another area of research that I'm looking into is taking the compound and impregnating it onto the surface of things.
More general question. There are hundreds and hundreds of colleges and universities with professors and students who are doing research and looking at trying to answer questions and who have hypotheses.
Hypotheses.
So why did it take so long to figure out something like this?
Yeah, I mean, biofilm research has been going on for decades, but a lot of the early research was trying to figure out the early information about how they form.
Mm-hmm.
What do the bacteria need to do to form them? What types of compounds do they use to stick to surfaces? So once those basic pieces started to fall into place, then we could begin to start asking more questions about, okay, if we know this about how they form, how can we flip that on its head and now figure out ways to prevent them from forming? So it's not any different than figuring out new drug targets for chemotherapy or new drug targets for antimicrobials. This is the same way. Once we figure out how bacteria are communicating with each other, then we can look for targets on ways we can disrupt that. So that's kind of where the field is currently at, and that's why we're starting to ask those questions and find out those answers.
Dr. Andrew Russell, Associate Professor of Biology here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Russell, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Yes, thank you so much.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to John J. Miller, Director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale, John Bertka, his new book, Gateway to Statesmanship, and Dr. Andrew Russell from Hillsdale's Biology Department. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. The assistant producer of the program is Sam Lair. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Red Bluff Roundup is on. April 19th, 20th, and 21st. Get your tickets now. Over $350,000 is up for grabs for 700 competitors. It's the biggest three-day rodeo in the country. Tickets are on sale now, so grab the good seats while you can. It's consistent action with bucking horses, bulls, barrel racing, roping, wild pony riding, and more. Friday is Patriot Day, brought to you by Food Max and Outback Contractors. Gates open at 5, rodeo at 7, and an after party with live music. Saturday brought to you by Sierra Pacific Windows, Sierra Pacific Industries, and Red Bluff Dodge. Gates open at 12, rodeo at 2:30, and an evening concert by country music star Chase Matthews. And Sunday is Haleakala and Dignity Health St. Elizabeth Hospital Tough Enough to Wear Pink Day. Gates open at 12, rodeo at 1:30. Get your tickets now at the Roundup office or online at redbluffroundup.com.
The property insurance crisis in California is starting to affect the business insurance property also. 200 to 300% rate increases in business property rates or not writing business insurance at all are becoming the norm. At Siskiyou Insurance, we have over 100 years experience in writing business insurance in the North State. We can help. We live here and care about our community and want to make sure that you keep your business with a local agent that knows our town and supports it every day. And we'll get you the best deal we can. Call Curtis Byron at Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345. Siskiyou Insurance, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.